thank you, Dory, and thank you, Camden Public Library, and thank all of you for coming out to listen about this very important issue that's confronting Maine, and that's mountaintop industrial grid-scale wind. If any of you know my history, I've been a long advocate of renewable energy, including wind power, for decades. I probably was sounding off about the whole concept of renewable energy well before anybody else was, in my affiliation with Green Ideas. I want to start out by saying I'm still an advocate for renewable energy, and I'm still an advocate for wind energy when the technology is available and the renewability and the responsible placing of turbines is determined, probably more on a community level or a residential level rather than on an industrial scale, which changes the nature of the game. 3 years ago, if you'd asked me, in fact, Angus King called me up 3 years ago and said, "Hey, Jonathan, I'm going to put some Met Towers up on the mountains behind your home to see about the wind potential and putting industrial," he didn't say industrial, I guess I coined that word, "put some wind turbines up there, produce some green energy." And I said, that's good, I'm happy about that. I think we need to move in that direction. It's probably a good idea. I then said, well, let's grab a couple peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. This is in the middle of winter in January, because I do a lot of winter mountaineering and stuff. And I said, "Angus, let's climb up and look at some of these Met Towers when you get them up." And he declined on that score. And it wasn't the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I think it was the sub-zero weather. But anyway, he told me they're going to put 10 turbines up at the most. So about a year and a half later, I realize that he has plans for 48 industrial turbines along 9.6 miles of ridgeline in the Highland Mountains, which stand right in the face of the famed Bigelow Preserve, which I fought to protect back in 1976. The Bigelow Preserve is a wonderful area owned by the public. You're looking at most of it here. This is Little Bigelow, and this is Big Bigelow here. This is where a turbine would stand. And these turbines are not small, okay? They're 400 feet tall. 400 feet tall, twice as tall as the tallest building in Maine, higher than the Statue of Liberty. And they move around at the tips at 180 miles an hour, they cut out an area, as you can see, the size of a Boeing 747. They've got federal aviation lights on top that blink constantly. Now, imagine a pristine wilderness setting and putting 48 of these up in an area that has a night sky that's black, where the stars stand out in great brilliance. You know, one of the things I've always done in my life is I've tried to keep the lights out in the North Woods, because it's a special place. It's the last place on the Eastern Seaboard. And yet, they want to put 48 turbines, and now I just learned Iberdrola called me up 3 weeks ago, wants to put another 100 turbines on the backside of the mountains there. And First Wind now has another proposal for 100 turbines that will stretch all the way from Abbott all the way across to Bingham, and that will connect up with another 100 turbines across the Kennebec in Concord and Lexington Township, with another 38 turbines on the Highland Mountains. So my region of the state has been designated as the wind capital of the world. Now, if you'd asked me 3 years ago about this, as I've told you, I would have been very supportive. In fact, when John Baldacci created an energy office, I said he stole my idea, because that's what I wanted to do, was to create an energy office, because we certainly do have to get off the fossil fuel fix. Interestingly enough, as a sidelight though, you should realize that only 1% of our electricity in this country is produced by oil. Only 1%. Most of our oil consumption, obviously, is for transportation and for heating. That's what it is in Maine. But anyway, getting onto renewables seemed like a good idea. But then in April of 2008, the governor created a task force, the governor's task force on wind energy, and that task force convened. I was actually very happy that that task force had been formed. I thought it would turn out with something good that would promote renewable good energy. Well, it turns out the task force was more owned by the wind developers than it was by citizens or engineers or scientists who were willing to sit down and study the issue of mountaintop industrial wind and what it really meant ecologically as well as economically. They passed a bill called LD2283 in 15 short days. It came out of the governor's task force that actually designated 2/3 of the state of Maine as open to wind. 3 million of those acres are in the unorganized townships. And as many of you have probably heard, in at least 10 locations around the state now where wind developers have tried to put up turbines in local communities, they have passed ordinances to prevent their backyard, and there's nothing wrong with being a NIMBY. You people here should be NIMBYs about Ragged Mountain. It's in your backyard, and if you're not going to defend your backyard, what are you going to defend? So anyway, they passed a law that stated as a goal that the state would produce 2,700 megawatts of land-based wind by the year 2020. In order to do this, they would have to put up 1,800 turbines, 400 feet tall, stretching over 360 miles of Maine's mountains and ridgetops. In the process of putting those up in terms of the power lines and the vegetation removal from subalpine and alpine regions, they were going to have to clear cut over 50,000 acres of carbon sequestering forest. I've spent the last 3 years of my life working on climate change. I am absolutely aware of the tragedy and the crisis that faces us. I believe we have moved past the tipping point on climate change. It is happening, it is going to happen, and we're going to have to learn to adapt to it. The good news is that Maine is geographically located in a spot in the world where we are not going to have a whole lot of problems because we have a lot of fresh water, our growing season is going to increase, but we're going to lose a lot of species that were here, and the whole nature of Maine is going to change dramatically. So one has to ask, if you're sort of recognized in the state of Maine as Mr. Green, how could a Green be against wind power when he understands the science and the truth about climate change? And that was my bottom line. Okay? I love the mountains of Maine. I live in the mountains of Maine. I cherish the mountains of Maine. The Ragged Mountains as well as the Bigelows. This is what makes Maine such a special place. This wonderful place. This is why many of us live here. But I want to tell you honestly that if I thought mountaintop industrial wind was going to help mitigate climate change, or industrial wind in general, I'd cry, but I would be willing to sacrifice some mountains for that issue, because I consider that a crisis of untold proportions. And I want to get into the specifics a little bit later of why industrial wind will not reduce greenhouse gases. It seems counterintuitive, but it's absolutely true. So I decided I would start looking at the science behind this. I'm a scientist by training, a botanist, taught at the University of Maine at Farmington for many years. I believe that you have to make decisions based on sound, solid science. Science that is done independently. not done by the wind developers, not done by the oil and coal companies, but science that is done by independent people who are really seeking the truth. And when I did the research on and looked at the science from these sorts of independent sources, it became apparent to me that mountaintop industrial wind is both an ecological disaster and an economic boondoggle. If I ask people in this room right now how many people support wind energy, I'd probably even raise my hand. And you see the polls that say 80% of Mainers support wind energy. Well, indeed, those polls are pretty good if you ask that question. But if you ask the question, do you support wind energy that causes irreversible ecological damage, that creates noise pollution, visual pollution, that decimates wildlife habitat, that does not reduce greenhouse gases, and will cost you to pay a lot more for electricity, what do you think the result of that poll would be? It would be just the opposite of what the wind developers are touting. Irreversible damage. Mars Hill. You think you ever can restore that after you've taken that hunk out of the side of the mountains? And I supported Mars Hill when they first proposed it. Kibbe Mountain. They have to blast roads up through these mountains. I can pass these around. That are 90 feet wide to 110 feet wide. They can take 90 tons of heavy machinery and these long turbine parts up into the mountains. This is irreversible damage, my friends. You can't restore this no matter what a wind developer tells you. On the Highland Mountains, they're planning to blast out 1.6 million cubic yards of material. That's enough to fill 100,000 trucks that would stretch all the way from the Bigelow Preserve all the way to North Carolina. And why do I mention North Carolina? Because North Carolina passed a moratorium on mountaintop industrial wind because they realized their mountains were an economic engine for them. And to destroy them this way was actually counter to their economic sustainable ambitions. This won't go away until the glaciers return. Number two, noise pollution. And Art and Cheryl Lindgren, who live on Vinyl Haven, are going to be here. They're here now, and they're going to talk a little bit later on this. But noise pollution is very real. Put yourself in a pristine, wild environment like the Highland Mountains, where at night the sound levels are at 15 decibels. And then on the mountains around you, you have 400-foot towers spewing out 100 decibel sounds. Now the wind developers will tell you, and I've done this, you go up underneath the turbine, doesn't sound like anything. You go 200 feet away, it really doesn't sound that bad. But if you're a mile downwind, it sounds like there's a jet engine in your backyard. It's a pulsing, thumping sound. And we have some of these sounds here now. Huge noise pollution. 35 lights in a pristine environment, flashing constantly at night in an area that was just the mountains and the stars. Visual pollution. And yet this law that they passed says that if you're a resident that lives close to these things, you can't complain about the visual problems that they create. If you're a hiker on the Appalachian Trail and the trail happens to be within, in this case, within 8 miles of an industrial turbine site, then you have the right to complain about the visual impact. But if you're living with it 24/7, you can't. And that was put in there by one of the wind developers who worked with the task force to create this law. So we have visual pollution. Economically, it's a no-brainer. 60% of the cost of all this industrial wind you're paying for, your tax dollars. Initially, it was coming through the American Recovery Act, or stimulus program, and after that expires in December, it will be in a production tax credit of 2.1 cents per kilowatt and an accelerated depreciation. 60% In this project, that's $180 million of your tax dollar are going to destroy Maine's mountains in this particular location. But what about the cost to the people? The cost to the people. The one independent study that's really good that's been done shows that if you live within 2 miles of a turbine, your real estate values go down 20 to 40%. So these wind developers come in and say, oh, we're going to give you free electricity. So you save $100 a month on your electric bill, or $50 a month on your electric bill. And your taxes are going to go down somewhat, although there's never been a place in Maine where the taxes have gone down yet. They tell you that this is going to happen, but so you get a $50 a month write-off on your electrical bill, but the value of your property goes down 40%. Sounds like a good deal to me. Okay, the fact is that economically, in rural areas where we depend on tourism, it's going to dampen tourism. Hunting and fishing won't exist in this area. People aren't going to come and hike in areas where they're listening to those constant sounds and seeing those constant sights. It's just not going to happen. It's going to hit us negatively that way. So why are these wind developers doing it in the name of greenness? Because it's not green. As I already told you, it doesn't reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Now that sounds counterintuitive, so I want to explain it to people. We have a grid system that has to stay balanced. The supply of electricity has to equal the demand of electricity. Now the wind blows intermittently. You never know when it's going to blow. But when it blows, it produces electricity. And that electricity has to be accepted by the grid. It has no other place to go. In order to balance the grid, they have to turn something else down or off. When the wind stops blowing, they have to turn those other sources, usually fossil fuel sources, back up. Now, what happens when you drive in stop and go traffic? What happens to your fuel consumption? It goes up. What happens to the pollution that you're putting out? It increases. So the fact that wind is intermittent results in, actually, according to a Colorado study by Bentec, an increase of 10% carbon emissions. So for me, that was really the straw that broke the camel's back. The fact that wind actually is enhancing greenhouse gases because of this up and down, that has to be done in order to balance the grid. Now, if we have storage mechanisms for this power, and there are some that are potentially being developed, but they're decades off, it might make a different situation, where we could store the power and use it later, whether we store it as hydrogen or we store it in batteries or in ammonia or in a pump situation, balloon-like situation. But that's not here. And this mountaintop wind is really inefficient. You'll hear that these projects are 100 megawatt projects, but they're only producing at about 20 to 25% efficiency. So if they say they're a 100 megawatt project, they'll maybe only produce 20 megawatts. The Stetson project is producing, according to a FERC website, at about 19.2%. The Sisk Mountain project, according to a FERC site, and they won't give us the data, that's why we have to go to FERC, is producing at 17.2%. And the Yumpy, where we do have the data, the turbine they put up at the University of Maine Presque Isle, is producing electricity at 10.2%. Now, would you buy a stove or something that produced an efficiency rate of 10.2%? These things are not efficient. In fact, there's only two places in the state of Maine, the top of Mount Katahdin and the top of Sugarloaf, where wind actually approaches the wind offshore. And I'm not going to get into the issue about wind offshore because it's another issue, but I have very serious concerns about that approach, particularly in terms of dealing with this intermittency factor. So the bottom line for me was I couldn't stand by and watch this ecological disaster unfold. I couldn't continue to watch the economic insanity of this. This is a scam. This is about mountain slayers and profiteers who learned how to use the system to take your tax dollar to put up things that in 10 years, when the production tax credits dry up will be rusting on the tops of these mountains. And so I've embarked on God knows another campaign. And I'll tell you, I wasn't planning on it. My swan song was going to be climate change. And here I am, it's just so ironic, fighting wind. How did that ever happen? It's just, it's beyond me. But I want to show you this video that we produced. I helped start this organization, the Friends of Highland Mountains. This was produced by a woman named Karen Pease and a guy named Tom Olds. It says it all. And it hits me emotionally because it's my backyard, obviously. But I think it will hit you emotionally, too, because this is being played out from Bower Mountain to up in Washington County all the way to Spruce Mountain in Woodstock in Oxford County. There are currently 4 operating wind facilities, 14 more now that are in the pipeline for construction, and 24 more sites that have or have met towers, and another 10 sites that they think are good for industrial wind. So let's see the film. Then Cheryl and Art are going to talk to you about their experiences in Vinyl Haven, and we'll open up the whole thing for questions.
And there are seats. There's single, 2 up here. If anybody wants to sit down, there are some seats.
And after you see it, I'm going to want you to sign a petition to help me save the Highland Mountains.